His next items, starting with 42 through 64, these will all be within the concluding activities. In other words, what's happening here is that you're redoing main items that are already done before, but either at a different occasion, slightly different flavor, situation, you know, to expand and to add to the Lord's pleasure. Right? So like you have the principle of eating, so that's there. But now, not very many people are going to be happy if they only eat once in a day. So they're always happy with, you know, there's more meals. It doesn't mean that there's a different way of eating. It means at the main meal, then you eat with your hands and put it in your mouth, and at, you know, some other snack, then you rest it on top of your head, and, you know, something else, then, you know, you'll push it in through the belly button or something like that. No, the eating remains the same. You understand? But because, you know, different times of the day, like we rest at night, but we also like to rest, take some rest in the day, or, you know, like for different occasion we may dress differently. You know, in the morning we dress in one way, evening another way, like that. So in this way, the main principles of worship, what we offer, then expands through the day for the Lord's pleasure. So the principle of offering naivedya, or something to eat, then it's expanded where you have seven offerings in the day in big temple worship. Right? It's the same item, but in its expanded form. So this expanded form is worshiping the Lord in so many different ways, so many different situations. So that basically is expansions of those 16 items, which are either connected with it as some were before, or they fall into pranam, which means just concluding activities. We just keep doing things throughout the day. You ending up offering prayers and like miscellaneous kind of things. So in this we'll see either one or both. Either they're ending some function or miscellaneous, or they're just expansions of the previous. Right? So 42, offering aroti, mangal arti. So this is rings in his hair. Okay. Huh? Yeah, no. We're just looking at. Okay, so okay. So in other words, after eating, we see then you do a little bit more with the hair. You do, you know, a little bit more with the clothes, some more something fancy again with the mukut, putting a little bit more chandan, other very special jewels. See, it's just like there's two ways you can look at something like that. And one system is basically Westerners understand the most, but then sometimes the other is there. It's a little bit more fancy. See, the general principle is whoever the senior person is, they go first, and then everybody else afterwards. And that's the simplest form of respect. Right? But then we see, and there's some occasions where the junior persons go first and the senior person last. Right? So if it's a matter of more respect, prestige, these kind of things, and generally the main person is last. If it's a matter of some kind of service, accepting some kind of service, the main person is generally first. Like you're going to serve prasadam, the main person is first. But let's say giving a lecture, you know, all the junior persons will give lecture first, and the senior person gives last. Right? Is that understood? So one should understand the flavor, the difference in flavor in these two. Because one has to be able to tell. In other words, if we're rendering service to them, then generally it's first. You know? If it's a matter of formal respect, then we're offering, well, may worship them and then others. You know, like you're washing feet, so many have come. So the senior most you worship first, and then like that. But we see, let's say, in giving a lecture or things like that, then it's natural that you want to, you begin with your preliminaries and you end with a conclusion. Right? So the conclusion is the most essential point. Krishna says in the Gita that of the, how you say? I think of the points of argument, of nyaya, he is the conclusive statement. Right? So the conclusion is what carries the weight. The other is technical. Anybody who reads a book can memorize and learn unlimited technical jargon and points. But how that applies and how its application comes from realization. It means application other than the general thing, but how you actually can accept it into your life. You know? Like that. That's an interesting point. So this where it becomes like a value and like that, where you can really identify with it, where it becomes part of you. That takes conclusion, that takes realization. So the natural thing is after preliminary, then there's a conclusion. So then others may speak first, and then that is last. Right? Or if you have a procession, right? You don't have the king first, you have all the little things in the front, and flag bearers, and this, and guys and horses, and that, and elephants, and that, and then finally you have the king. Right? So you're having a festival, and little things come first. You know, or if you're going to have a big drama or a big musical performance, you'll have the junior artists or shorter, lighter things first, and then you'll have the major item, you know. Or in a meal, you have all your little things in the beginning, and then you have your major part of the meal after, you know. So there's this difference. So you can see here is like here, offering Ganda again and decorating the Lord's body with tilak designs. So it's like you've already done the Ganda for like putting on the body, keep cool and these things. Now you're doing like little decorations, little, you know, fine things. They're more refined than before. Before you're just putting some on the body and things like that, or putting on the feet. These things, they're like part of the bath and basic dressing. Now it's more kind of like refined ornamentation. Or then kustuba, we see then you've offered all the other ornaments, but now the best of all the ornaments is kustuba. So you've put all the other things just to make look nice, but now comes, you know, the king of the jewels, you know, just like you're decorated with your chandan and on all this, but now comes the real fine part of it. You understand? So like that, or like you have your main meal and then you have your sweets. So they in themselves are a very special item. So it's in your meal you have from lesser to more important. But even you've introduced the main important aspects of the meal, then you're going to have dessert. You know, dessert may be, you know, just at that time, maybe sometime a little bit later, like this kind of thing. You understand? So these are more, like here with the chandan decorations, that's more of like the finer things. Dessert afterwards, or kustuba, then it's the king comes after the basic preliminary. Varieties of flowers and garlands. You've already put something before, but now you get more into fine decoration and all these kind of things. You know, it's more relaxed. The other one is more formal, you've done, and all these things, and all the preliminaries, removing evil influences, and dressing and chanting Gayatri, doing Achman and all these kind of things like this. Now it's like fine, the Lord's relaxing and you're doing these kind of things. You understand? That's the mood of these. So that mood is there in the, you know, one may have to take these 64, and they may have to go back into their original points. You know? It means you have 16 main items. These other expansions of them, instead of doing three or four expansions, you may only do one of them. But you may do these various aspects at once. Put some chandan on the feet, may put on the body, but then you also do some decorations. Right? You understand? So that's what's going on here. So this is continuing now with, you're doing artik, offering a Mangal artik. So this Mangala Arti means...
I just had a question about this, like, small fine things. like you were mentioning painting tilak designs on the Lord's face. And also Vrindavan, I saw Andhra Prabhu will paint designs on Krishna's belly button. So like how much of these designs and these small things you use from Shastric evidence, and how much more you let your own idea, like own feelings take over and do things that you think it looks nice for Krishna.
That's an important point, because you have, see, the Shastra will give general directions and principles. Specifically, it gets into the principles, the philosophy behind them, and specific applications that are especially Krishna-likes, you know, that are especially good for that situation. Then, depending upon what are facilities, what you have, this, that, then you may expand. Best is to take also that kind of direction from Shastra, or things that have been handed down, local custom. As long as the local custom is within, a proper reasonable context. You know, let's say there's a tradition of Pancharatrik, you know, strict Pancharatrik or strict Vedic worship. So those things may have been going on for generations. So it's taken from a main Shastric principle, just due to that time, place, circumstance, or locality, something becomes more exaggerated, you know, or that becomes more prominent. While in another situation, they maybe don't have that facility or that kind of interest, it's just done a little bit formally, or they don't have any facility for it, it's dropped. You understand? Just like, let's say, you have a place where very few flowers are. So at the time for offering flowers, some flowers are offered, and that's it. You have a place where there's so many flowers, then they will work flowers in so many ways. Decorate so many different flowers, put flowers on the plate, you know, that they offer, you know, put flowers in the water, put, do so many things with the flowers, and like that. Maybe, you know, do a Abhishek with flowers, so many things that they'll do. So all these things are there, this, they expand according to what they have. You know, just like here. Purnahuti, you offer different nice things into the fire, right? That are things that the fire likes, that you can, you know, eat very nicely, you know, that burn nicely, or things that are, you know, respectable, or, you know, medicinal things, or opulent things. You know, gold, jewels, or cloth, or different. So, depending on what you have, like you see here, we have very minimal facility, right? But offering into the fire, then, we have frankincense is one of the things that you can offer into the fire, you know, with the herbs and other things. So instead of just throwing in chunks, like most people, most, you know, yajnik priests will do, we powder it and throw it in. And so it makes a big flame. You know? So it's some fun for Agni. But it's not that, oh, that must be done. Or that there's a Shastric rule that must be done like this. No, all these nice things must be offered. Right? It's just like cloth can be offered. So now you can take the cloth, it can be just any cloth, nice clean cloth, and just throw it into the fire. Now we see in many places the tradition is they like to offer, you know, this big yajna, red silk saris that has jari on it. You know, so you're talking about, you know, 5,000, 10,000 rupee saris. The big, huge yajnas that they're concluding after, that's like in circles that always deal with big yajnas, they expect to see something like that. Because if you want to offer cloth, then this is the nicest and fanciest of them. Right? You understand? But any cloth will do. It doesn't say it must be a red sari, silk sari with jari. Right? It doesn't say that. It just says, you know, cloth can be offered. So by the tradition, then this is considered the most valuable. Right? Like in India, then of all the different kinds of cloth, then, okay, the silk cloth is like the most pure and nice and all that. You know, that's fancy. Wool is also more pure, but it's not so fancy. When you think of dressing up fancy, you think of silk, not wool. Right? And then, of that, then decorated. Right? There's nothing more decorated than saris. Right? You can just have a plain silk piece of cloth. Okay, that's nice. But more than that, you see the saris are. And then more than that are ones that are done with jari. So then that comes down for those within Bharatvarsha, you know, with that kind of taste, that kind of sattvic taste, that this is like the fanciest piece of cloth you can offer. Right? But the Shastra doesn't necessarily say that. It'll just say nice cloth. Or it'll just say cloth. And just according to your means, you do nicer and nicer. Right? It says jewels. So you may just go to then get those little dinky little pieces, you know? You go out and spend 10 rupees and buy, you know, Pancharatnas or Navaratnas, you know, for 10 rupees. You know, it's little dinky little pieces. While they're doing their other work, it falls off. You know, it's worth nothing. All they do is sell it for this kind of stuff. You can throw that in. You've got the rule. It's done. Or you can get some nice ones, small, or you can get some big ones. Depends how much you want to put into it. You know, like that. So that's the point. Main thing is, of course, you know, some fruit, some ghee, some devotion, some mantras. That's enough. That's a basic. And then from there you can expand. So now we have this cloth. Now we can take it. We get it. It's folded up nicely. And in a nice folded way, we can throw it into the fire. Right? But now fire is a particular medium. Right? A particular element. It acts. It has its nature. The way it's behaved. Now, if you take a sari that's folded up very nicely, because when they come, they're very nicely folded and very tightly packed. Now, if you throw that in the fire, can Agni take it very easily? What will happen? It'll not burn. It'll around the edges a little bit, and it'll sit there and smolder and everything like that. And you can come back after an hour, it'll still be smoldering away and making smoke. Now, if we take that and open it and throw it into the fire, then what'll happen? Yeah, it'll just immediately catch fire. The whole thing will burn up in like, you know, 1 second, 2 seconds. Right? So the Shastra doesn't say, well, take that and then open it. No, it's just common sense. You know, you can accept it more. It'll burn nicer in that way. So like that. Like when you put things on the fire, you put it in such a way the fire will continue to burn. You don't throw it in so the fire goes out. And when some people throw bananas in the fire, it doesn't say, don't throw them all on top of the fire so it goes out. You know, fires, either you make the fire very big so that everyone can throw it straight in, or if it's small, everyone should put it more towards the edge, and then slowly, slowly it'll burn. You know, things that don't burn well, like bananas and handfuls of grains and stuff like that. You understand? So you have to see that what is happening applies to the situation. Means Krishna is accepting the items through the fire. That means the fire has to be able to digest them. And fire doesn't digest things that you just smother with. So it may be a nice sentiment, yes, I got to put it straight into the middle of the fire. You can do that and put the fire out. Or you can put it more to the side, the fire can still burn, and slowly it will burn everything that you offer. So the whole point is intelligence is also used along with the mood, the sentiment. But it's all based on the Shastra. Right? Now, when you unfold that sari, you can just kind of wad it up and put it there. Or you can take it and kind of like tie it in a nice kind of way. So it's very open and loose, but still very, but nicely done. You know, like you see sometimes in the West, they'll take napkins and do amazing things with them. When they put them on really, you know, high-class tables, they're going to fleece you 100 rupees for a, you know, glass of soda water. So they make the napkin very attractive. It's the same napkin. Right? Or let's say, it's not the same napkin. Now it's become a serviette. Like that. The plain ones you fold up on the side, either in a square or triangle, that's napkin. And with a fancy one, that's a serviette. So like that. So, but that's not mentioned in the Shastra. Shastra just says at the final offering of the Purnahuti, offer nice things in the fire. And it'll give, you know, a list of things that can be offered. But it doesn't say all those things. But according to the traditions and all this, then those are done. Now you have to see what you're doing fits within proper traditions, right? So the Vedic standard is when things offered to the Lord, these all come within the realm of His likings, right? His standards. So it'll be, you know, mode of goodness minimum. You understand? We may be in passion and ignorance, but we're offering it not to we're not offering it to ourselves, we're offering it to Krishna. Right? So therefore it must be to His liking. Why I'll offer something to somebody, it's not to His liking. I'll offer it according to their liking, not my liking. Unless there's such purity and innocence, then you can take local things that you like, though, that match as close as possible. You know, they're pure and all this, and I may offer it. Like I may be in from another country, a different culture, but there's some special preparation, some, you know, like some kind of special sweet or this or that, and it's like considered, you know, the best of all the preparations. You know, so then those things will be offered, as long as they're, you know, pure and in the mode of goodness. You understand? You can adjust like that. But a lot of that adjustment, when it's talking about from different countries, that means in India. You know, like the Gujaratis will consider one preparation that's the best. This is their best sweet, their Mohan Bhog or something. And Bengal will think it's their Rasgulla. You know, so you get these kind of things. So the whole point is you offer first-class stuff. So Bengalis will say, well, this is first-class. And Gujaratis will say, that is first-class. And Marwaris will say, another thing's first-class. South Indians, a different thing's first-class. So according to the culture, the locality, what's available, their traditions, they have. But the point is that it's all up to the standard of being able to be offered. Does that make some sense? So like that, if you have plenty of chandan, then you can do more things with it. You know? But, so we see that, generally we see traditionally feet are decorated, maybe the hands are decorated, faces decorated, like chandan's put on the body and all that. Like that. Navels is there. I don't know. It's a interesting place, but you don't, it's not as prominent a spot. It's like if it comes down between the navel and the face, you might do the face first. And if you have so much chandan left you don't know where to put it, then you can put it on the face. You know what I'm saying? So you have to see just what is there.
I've got the principle now, but just on one detail I'd like to ask. Once I see in a temple, our temple, Iskcon temple, putting a mold and see the baby's face. Like one of those black molds. First I thought it was a smudge or something. I could put Jerry so he put it on.
Uh-huh.
Would it be something
Sita? That
we, yeah.
Or Radharani?
I know Radharani put here. There's something in between here, like between the cheek and the chin. It was like here. It's a black mold.
I don't know about that. Because it mentioned the Shastra, Radharani will wear a dot of musk on her chin. And I've seen that. Where did I see that? I saw that in some other places also. Oh, it was interesting. I was just in, when I was in Poland, because we stay in the schools. In the summertime, the schools are closed. So it's not uncommon for big parties to hire the school. And this way the school makes money during the summer. They hire the school. Means that they can use the rooms and the bathrooms and the showers and that, so a big party can stay instead of going to hotels and stuff. They just take the whole school. So we happened to be in the history classroom, and on the wall it had all 20 of the Polish, you know, royalty, the kings. Like that, I'm sure you know that list, that this line of photographs very well. So I think the fifth one was a queen. And it was interesting because that was back in the, what would that have been? I think like 1300s or something. Huh? Yeah, I think it was 1300s. Because the first king was like 1100s or even 1000. And then there was a 300 or 250 year gap before the second king. Like that. Because they got so fired up after the first king that they got so drunk that then the Germans and others walked in and took over the place and took them 250 years to sober up enough to kick him out again. Something like that? Yeah. So the fifth one was a queen. And the interesting thing was is in the picture she's wearing a crown but her head is covered with a veil and she has a black dot on her chin. Like that. So it seems that this concept of beauty of covering the head and wearing a dot on the chin goes back a long ways. You know? And only in more modern times and that's kind of been lost as a sign of beauty. Like now, you know, the only ones that'll wear this are generally really wild ladies and they'll generally put it on the side of their face. So in the Western tradition now you only see it on the side. They'll call it a beauty mark. So some have it naturally, some will put it on. But you generally have to be, you know, pretty wild to do those things. Like I think Mae West used to do that too. Other such, you know, modern society girls. So it may be that they heard that she wore and just put it on the side because that's the only thing that Westerners are used to.
I checked. No.
It doesn't have.
No.
So they were just putting it. Because if you're going to put, it should, it's centered. You see on ladies, it's centered. Beauty, symmetry is beauty in the Vedic concept. So the dot is between the eyebrows, you know, the kumkum is between the eyebrows, and they put a beauty spot, it would be in the chin, in the center. This off-center thing is, because the ladies who wear it are a bit off-center. Like that. Right? So if they're centered, then they wear it in the middle. It's a matter of taste. You know?
Prabhupada's told a little difference between the chaste ladies, they part of hair here, and the society girls.
Yeah, I think we discussed that before. The part in the middle. But though I think it's, I'm not sure, I think Punjab or Sindhis, they parted on the side. That's just their standard place of party. You seen that? I've seen many Punjabi ladies, or maybe Sindhis, they part on the side. But, you know, they're also a bit more wild on that side. That side of India is more wild. But the general standard is the part is down the middle, the dot is in the middle, the beauty mark is in the middle. So everything's on the center line. Yes. Oh, just a minute, let's finish on this. So therefore, one should be careful of doing things that aren't based on Shastra. Though one must understand is the Shastra gives basic directions, because it can't give every last detail. Because when it does get into detail, you see that the tendency is everyone throws it out, right? Mm-hmm. If you give too much detail, the devotee, oh, too much, and they'll throw it out. And if you just give the principle, they won't catch the principle, and then they start speculating. Right? So one has to be intelligent and be able to take from the principle, understand the purpose, understand what its goal is and all these things, and then, because the whole idea, if it's to make Sita look more beautiful, then who is she being made look beautiful, most beautiful for? Us? Or Ram? So I mean, in other words, for Ravana or for Ram? Okay, so now, where does Ram like his ladies to wear the beauty dots in the chin? Okay, and where does Ravana like his to wear theirs? All right, so now you have it. So you have to look at it like that. You may say, well, we're looking beautiful for the darshan, but no, we're making Krishna look beautiful for the darshan. We're making Radharani look beautiful for Krishna. You understand? This is the difference. See, if Radharani looks beautiful, Krishna is not going to go away. If Sita looks nice and taken care of, Ram won't go away. Otherwise, you know, they don't like it. Ram lives in the forest. You know, he doesn't like your worship. He can go off. It's not a problem for him. Krishna has a whole big forest. He doesn't have to stand around in our building. Go off and herd some cows. So the point is therefore Radharani is made to look more beautiful. But who is that beauty for? For Krishna. So one has to always be very, very careful in applying the detail to understand where we stand. What is our position in it? You understand? Does that make some sense? So it's a matter of study, association. These things you gain. It's not just you have a book, you get from it. Krishna Kshetra points out in the beginning of this book, this is not a do-it-yourself manual. That you just pick it up, read it, and that's it. No, once you pick it up, read it, know what's there. But still, the refining of it and all that comes from association. Associating with others who do these things. Like, if you really want to know what's going on here, then you should associate with Janani Vas Prabhu, Pankajangri Prabhu, you know, Krishna Kshetra. Those who deal in this is their, what they do. Okay? Then you get that mood in which it's done. That makes some sense? Yes? No? Yes?
We actually have two technical questions.
Two technical questions. Means it's too technical? Means with two O's or with... or it's one O means it's for a technical question or...
It's a numeral word.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Means two questions that are technical.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one is that Krishna's head is adorned with a peacock feather.
Yes.
So that peacock feather can only be there if there is a turban, isn't it? Or is it...
No, it can be there if there's a crown.
No.
This means he always wears. He always has. So maybe minimum is a single one. You know? But otherwise you can put so many. There's so many different kinds. There's ones that are... You know, they put many, many together in one place, or like big fans, or they just take on the peacock tail, the middle of it, you get all these, the actual eyes. And then on the edge, you get down at the bottom, the edge, you get a few of these ones that are like curled. They go out in a curl, but then I think there's only three or four per peacock, like that, but it's in a thing like that. So sometimes they take those and then they put those on jari. You know, put a jari piece to hold the shape and then you get that around the edge. You know? There are so many different things. But it's that... So it means that it's not that it means a peacock feather means only one, and if you put two, you're in Maya.
Yeah.
But at minimum, there should be one. But whether there's a turban or whether there's a crown, you know, he can wear.
There's always a pennant.
Generally, I've seen Krishna Balaram once. They did theirs where they took their wigs and tied them up in a top knot, and then put some jewels around it, decorated jewels, and then put a peacock feather there, like that. You see on some of the ones, baby Krishna, when he's real small, you'll see his hair is done like that. He's not wearing a crown or anything like that. But his hair is tied up in a knot, and there's a peacock feather. There's always a peacock feather.
The other one you were talking about, senior personalities, sometimes are worshipped first and sometimes they are worshipped last. In our puja here... When the puja we do right here in the Gurukul, we are bathing all the Vaishnavas. We're bringing them onto the same bathing tray. So I wonder, which should we... Should we bring the more senior or more junior Vaishnavas first?
No, that's there in that kind of thing where you're dealing on that level. Then they're all just taking them together. That's not a big problem. That's not. The main thing is that they're taking their bath after the Shaligrams.
Yeah.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So you won't do it the other way around. Like that. One has to understand these fine points. Who's first, who's last. Like I was just in watching one devotee's puja. And We haven't gotten to this point about Ija and yoga. We did a bit. So it's a very important point of understanding the difference of where you're approaching someone and getting their blessings before you actually do the worship and worshiping them. So now in approaching them, I may respect them. Like, let's say I want to get the blessings of somebody before going to someone senior, because by their blessings or by their encouragement or by what they're going to do, I'm going to get my work done. So I could just come and just be nice and all that. I could bring them a gift. I could bring garlands. I could bring chandan. I could bring things to eat. You know? But it's all in approach to that person. I'm not bringing the things to them that I'm going to give to the big person. You understand? Like, I bring a gift to some minister, you know, and then with his blessings I'm able to see the king. I'm not bringing the same gift, and after giving it to him, then I'm going to take it back and give it to the king. Or I bring him some nice thing to eat, and then after he's, you know, taken some, then I take it to the king. You understand? So there's a difference. We say it's worship, so it's the same. Right? But there's a difference. One has to understand. In culture, there's culture means refined. Sanskriti means refined, pure. Right? Like that. So samskar means to purify. You know, so there's some purity there, fineness. So in the mode of ignorance, things are pretty gross. In the mode of goodness, the things are pretty fine. And in the pure goodness, even more fine. So we have to be able to distinguish between these. We may just say, well, worship, worship, but that's the problem, is English is such a bozo language, you know, fit for guys that live, you know, whatever, in little shacks out in the field. Therefore, you don't have proper words, right? You have to remember, the Angles and the Saxons were a bunch of wild madmen that lived out in the bush, right? And then they got together the language, and with time it just became modernized, right? So for some people, those who lived in England, then their culture went from this barbaric state up to a civilized state where they refined it, so they have some deeper meanings, and then now it tails off into degradation, right? But now they're only a small part of people who speak English in the world, right? And it's not the main, you know, most prominent English form. Now you have in America and Australia where they just went from the barbaric state straight to the degradation state, and they'd missed out on that civilization in the middle. You know? So the language is very cropped. You know, it's been truncated very heavily. So it's just, you know, worship, we just have one idea because we don't do it. We don't worship our parents. You know, we don't get up in the morning, go in and respect our parents, offer obeisances or touch their feet or, you know, offer pranam. We don't do any of that. So that worship is there. We don't worship other senior members of the family. We don't worship our teachers. You know, we don't have such a thing really as gurus. You know, you don't really have worship of God so much. You know, you go into the church and, you know, you take some crackers and some wine and like that. There's no real offering like that. Jews, you may kiss the Torah, you know, but that's about as far as respect goes, you know. You know what I'm saying? So there's no real concept of worship. So it's just kind of like one thing like that. But in Sanskrit, you know, and Bengali and these, the Prakrit languages, it's very, the deep depth of these meanings has so much that it's hard to translate them into English. You know? So there's a whole broad variety of what that means. So I can worship somebody in approaching somebody else. Right? Like, I may take the blessings of my parents, you know, and respect them and worship them before I go off to school, where I'm going to respect and worship my teacher. Right? But I'm not going to give the same offering to both. The paraphernalia will be different, the mood in which it's given is different. Is that understood? So we have to be very, very careful of modern semantics. that we put our own meaning to the word. Because Prabhupada many times says that there's certain words, it's just very hard to translate. You know, like rasa. You don't have really a word in English. Prabhupada puts mellows. Right? But then when you use mellows, then you have to get into very kind of lofty literary English to kind of get a meaning out of it. You know, in other words, you have to go into the refined, and you don't get that out of the Wild West or, you know, things like that. You know, you get it out of the literary tradition that's developed, you know, in the English literary world. But you don't get it on the streets. You know, the only thing you get on the streets is, wow, that's real mellow. You know, just all it means is that it's real cool, or it's real boss, or it's real, you know, it just means, you know, it's just, all it means is it's good. But still, they don't know that literary level of mellow, meaning like a taste or a flavor, or an atmosphere, like that. So, unless we're coming from that kind of tradition, we have to be very careful that we don't put just very common usages, the limitation of a very common usage of a word on it, and then that's it. We have to understand there's more to it. So the difficulty then comes is, it's all worship to us, right? Anything where we just happen to offer some respect to someone else basically becomes worship, practically. So now, one has to be able to tell the difference between when one is approaching the Lord and the worship that is one's offering to the guru, to the paraphernalia, you know, to the Lord's associates. That is just preparing, taking their blessings, honoring them for their elevated position. But it has nothing to do with the offering that you're going to make to the deity or the paraphernalia you're going to make to the deity. Those are separate. In other words, they're not mixed. You're approaching them. The philosophical point is you only approach the Lord through the Lord's devotees. The Lord doesn't accept us directly. He accepts us through. We may approach directly, and He'll very nice. But then He'll instruct us to go through, come to Him through His devotees. Because His devotees are the most dear. So if we become just His devotee, big deal. But if His devotees are more dear, so if we become their devotees, then we become very dear to the Lord. So if we want to give Krishna the most pleasure, we'll become the devotee of His devotee. Right? Rather than try to become directly His devotee. How much happiness we can give? We'll give a small amount. Those devotees are giving Him a great amount. So now, if we come ourselves, we'll replace their great amount with our small amount. So is that a good deal? Yes or no? Yeah. So, or is it a better deal, keep the great amount there and add to it a small amount? Right? Just like you have a meal. The meal is very nice. Now if I give a little lemon, it's a small thing. I get a few drops of juice out of it. But it adds to the already existing nice flavor. Understand? So it increases. And by that mix, it gives a new taste. It's not just more of the same, it gives a new taste. There for the jivas. The internal potency is giving pleasure to the Lord. But you ask that little drop of the jiva, and they're assisting the internal potency. And it gives a new flavor. Right? Even though the meal is very nice on its own. But by that, it gives another. And it enhances it, but not enhances just that it brings out what's there. You know? But it gives its own kind of flavor. So this way then you have unlimited jivas, they add unlimited little flavors to the already wonderful, unlimitedly wonderful pastimes. Right? So that's the whole point, is we have to know who we are. So we approach Krishna through His devotees. Right? And Krishna's devotees, Krishna's paraphernalia is special. They're non-different Him. So they're worshipped. But they're not worshipped with Krishna's paraphernalia. Right? That would be like, I take the paraphernalia to the spiritual master, worship him with it, and then go give it to Krishna. No. Therefore, you see in the preliminary puja, generally when we come to it, we see it's just done with water or with flowers. You have the picture, you do the 16 items, but just with water out of the Achman cup, with the Samanyarga. And that's it. Then we approach Gauranga, offer prayers, 16 items with Samanyarga out of the Achman cup, pass. Then we approach Krishna, Manasapuja, all these different things. Then we take the main paraphernalia and worship Krishna with that. Right? But I've seen devotees think, well, I'm worshipping the spiritual master here, and I'm worshipping Krishna with the paraphernalia. So they say, well, why two worships? I can't understand the difference between the ija, which is the preliminary, approaching Krishna, getting the blessings through the devotees, and the worship of the Lord. In other words, it's an impersonal concept. It's all one. So then they'll take that paraphernalia for the deity and worship the spiritual master, because you're supposed to worship 16 items, and we approach the spiritual master first. And then they'll take that prasad and offer it to Krishna. Right? They don't understand. And it's not even that they're taking the lamp that's offered to Krishna, showing to the spiritual master, just taking his blessing, but not worshipping. Just taking his blessing. And then offering to Krishna, like we do in the Artik. That's also not a problem. But it's not happening like that. Because they're just mixing it. They say two things. Why do two things? I can do two things as one. Right? I have two subjects. Why two subjects? I'll mix them together and just have one. You know? But you're ruined. So one has to be able to tell the difference here. So that kind of fineness in that is also required in applying these rules. You know? That is what is required. Because the whole idea of the deity worship is to purify our rough grossness and bring us up from the mode of passion, mode of ignorance, to the minimum platform, the mode of goodness, and then purify us from there to pure goodness. The whole pancharatric system is to situate us in goodness, so from there we can get to pure goodness, rather than being situated in passion and ignorance and try to get from there to pure goodness. You understand? Like that. So that's the purpose of all these rules. So we have to approach it from that. It's not just a rule to be a rule. Right? There's a purpose behind it. It gives a pleasure. It adjusts to a certain thing. Because otherwise when you say, well, why the kastuba now? We offered all the ornaments before. Why we didn't offer the kastuba then? No, because the kastuba is like the best of all the jewels. There's nothing better than kastuba. So after all the other things are there, you know, basic little thing for his wrist and his turbans and his feet and all these things and some necklaces, now we're putting kastuba. Right? Like that. Because it's a very special. That's why it gets its, you know, like that. So it says, another wonderful. Offering kastuba and other wonderful jewels. Kastubadi vibhushana. So it means that level. Before we put general, nice. Now we're putting really special. You know? Just like you have trunks of jewels, but then you have a small box of the special stuff. You know, that you use for special occasions. So for Krishna, you know, like a festival. But for Krishna, every day is a festival. So those special ones are used every day. You know? We pick, but we'll pick those out and put. Is that understood? And your second, two technical questions.
The first one was a pita pa, and the second one was this one. Well, two avidas.
Huh?
First I asked about the pita pa, and then I asked about this, about it.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. So we have to understand this also just the levels that you're dealing with. Because even you take all the demigods and all great personalities, still the spiritual master is considered the top of all the demigods. Right? Because the demigods can't give you Krishna. right? The spiritual master can give you Krishna. Therefore, the spiritual master is even greater than all the demigods. Right? So therefore, you can put the spiritual master with all the other, you know, these other devotees. These are, you know, a line of acharyas, then we might make a difference. But just in the devotees, you know, the great devotees, then, like that, there's not a problem. Okay? It means if you're doing your regular worship and that, then you may do something with the line. Because, see, is then when you actually are giving it to him is when it's coming down. Right? It means you actually take it and offer it to them to accept it. That comes in this section. It's where you distribute prasadam. So when we distribute, we start with the spiritual master, all the Lord's associates and all that. And then you may come down a hierarchy there of who's senior and junior. Like that. But in what we're doing here is more simple. Does that make some sense? I mean, you can always, when you're, means they're all sitting in the tray, you can always pour water on an order from senior on down there. That you can do. Like that, mm-hmm. But they're all sitting in the tray together. It's not that you put one in the tray, bathe, take them out, put the next in the tray. No, you all there. So you can make differentiation in the order when you're bathing there.
But then when you bring them to the tray, you better put someone, the juniors, like first, before you bring the most senior, or the...
Depends upon how it's going to work, where they're going to be placed. Means if after placing the senior ones in, if this would be difficult to get to the junior, put the junior, then you do it the other. Whatever is, doesn't really matter. You know. That, because basically in this lineup here, there's not a whole lot of senior and junior. Like that. You had something?
Can we go establish it to debate Prabhupada before it? For other demigods or?
Generally would be offered to him first. Like that.
In Lakshmi's those consorts?
Oh, if the Lakshmis are in there then one would generally worship them first. But one can still bathe spiritual master. But in this case, then you can pour in Lakshmis and then like that. Then have Lakshmis and then spiritual master, Vidushi, Yogamaya, Guru Dhanaman, like that. Yes.
Lord Shiva. He's the biggest devotee.
Yeah, but still what I said is still the spiritual master is considered position. That's what I said. Spiritual master, then Vridhashiv. Yeah, then Yogamaya. Okay. But before any of them, then you could bathe the Lakshmis. Because here we're dealing the other side. See, everyone here is manifesting within the material realm. The others are manifesting the other side. Right. Any other questions? I hope there were no offenses committed against a particular language of a particular country that I mentioned. I'm just pointing out is that modern languages have great restriction in defining certain terms. They do very well in much, and of languages, English does quite well because it has many, many words for one object or one activity. So you can get quite a very rich explanation. But certain words that are like dealing with transcendental subject matter that they don't really have proper words for. It means material relationships and material situations. It's quite a refined language. But as far as transcendental, some things it just it's very hard to do, you know, deal with. You know. Like that. Like it was like, yeah. Who's smiling about it? Right. Of course, Hungarian must be perfectly.
Hungarian is pretty good in grammar.
Has the most variety of noises for cutting off heads, right? Point is, it's like, it's a good medium. And that's the medium that we, you know, specifically as a world language, preach through and all that. But we also just must understand that still in trying to explain some of these Sanskrit terms, that one has to be able to catch the whole context. Because as we mentioned, just like the word, let me say, bhav, right? Bhava. So generally we take that as mood. But bhava can also mean the situation. Like, oh, how did you like it? You went there. Was it? And you say, bhava bhavana. Right? It means the whole atmosphere wasn't good. It wasn't my mood. You know? It was others' moods. Or it was the situation itself. You know, it was dirty, unclean, unkept. You know, even though there's nobody there, it's just bad mood. You know, or it can be a relationship between people. So it can be my mood alone, my mood with others, others' mood, the situation in which you can express these moods. So it becomes very hard to find a good word just for that. You know, and the mood means not just what I thought. It's not what I'm thinking. It's what I'm experiencing, I'm feeling. And from that is how I'm going to act. Therefore, from the bhav or my mood, I'm going to have certain actions. Just like my bhav, I'm happy, then I'll be smiling or clapping or jumping up and down or like that. But just that somebody comes and very formally and, you know, you greet them and you smile and put on a very happy thing, that's not bhav. Right? Because it's not a felt emotion. It's you're doing it because you're supposed to do it. Understand? So someone may say, oh, he was very happy. He greeted us very nicely. But it's very shallow. It doesn't have any substance. Notice the bhav has more substance. So like that, you end up with difficulties. Because the one word can mean meant. So if one person just says, no, it's just my mood, and the other one's saying, no, the situation, then you get into big argument. But if you understand the full thing, then you can understand it applies in all these. You know, like we explained asana, right? Is that some, you know, generally it'll be translated as the Lord's asana. Prabhupada translated as, no, it's the spiritual master's asana. Because you don't approach the Lord directly. You approach the spiritual master. The spiritual master, through him, gets you into the situation in which the Lord will be sitting. So in other words, our entrance into the pastime is through the spiritual master. So therefore, it's the asana is his. Though, we see that when we're offering asana to the Lord, there's an asana given to the Lord. So we've first gone through that other asana. In other words, we're giving the asana to the Lord, but we're only seeing the asana. But the Lord doesn't just sit down in an asana, right? Krishna's not just sitting there in the Brahma Jyoti on his big opulent throne with Lakshmi. And that's it, and then you come there and offer your prayers. No, when he goes and sits down, the whole Vaikuntha planet is manifest. And all his associates, Garuda's there, and Vishwakshena's there, and all the other different personalities are there, and it's all happening, and all the energies. So when Krishna sits, then everything is there. So what we see is in the dhyanam, is we don't start with Krishna. So like if I say, explain Krishna in a situation. You know, explain the pastime. So then we would say, well, Krishna is doing this, that, and then so many things, and expand from there. But the Vedic thing is you start the other way. In a very, very wonderful grove of, you know, young Kadamba trees, you know, surrounded, and then, you know, so many things are happening, and nice flowers, and bees buzzing, and pleasant breezes, and the Jamuna is flowing, and all these different things, and all the sounds, and the birds, and everything's very nice. Then there's a nice jeweled throne, right? And this throne is very wonderful, with a canopy, and nicely decorated, and all that. On this throne, then, is sitting Krishna, with Srimati Radharani. Understand? So the situation is, we see Krishna through. That's the lila, that's the pastime. Pastime doesn't happen in space. Pastime happens in a situation. So therefore, Krishna descends, right, with his, together with all that. Right? So Krishna performs his pastimes here. He doesn't do it in Calcutta or Delhi. Vrindavan comes with him. All his associates come with him. When he comes to perform his pastimes, Lord Chaitanya, then he brings Navadvip, and all his associates come with him. Right? You understand? So therefore, the asan, because that's now this whole scene is there. How do we get into it? We want to offer, you know, something to Krishna. How do we get into there? Through the asana of the spiritual master. It means the spiritual master is there, he's doing it, so by approaching him. So in our meditation, the spiritual master is doing all those things. Right? We're assisting him. You understand? Does that make some sense? Yeah. So like that, then we get these subtleties. So these subtleties are very, very important. So the whole Pancharatrik system is to develop that subtleties in us. So rule, we have to see there's more behind it. Right? So what is behind all these things? Prabhupada says we read the books, we study the books. Reading, we go through, try to get whatever we can, understand, get the whole overview. Then we go back and study and get the details, go deeper. You know? The association of devotees is important there. Reading we can do, but the study, that we need the association of devotees. Right? Because when you read seriously, questions come. You know? We study. Because study means you want to come to some conclusion, come to some practical application. Read means we're coming to the point where we're destroying our anarthas, where we are gaining our faith in the process, like that. You know, and of course, we can read too, because the taste and all these things. I'm just saying, you get Bhagavad Gita for the first time, you read it through. Then you get an understanding, you understand you're not the body, all these different things. But then you go back and study to understand, how does this process work? Nicely. So then you really seriously need association of devotees. You know? So we read through, we know what's there, but then we should try to enter deeper into it and understand. Because these are all there, because these are what's going on in the spiritual realm. Right? Krishna comes, they bathe him, they feed him, he takes a little rest, right? Like right after this. Oh, that's coming up. Offering a mirror, 43. So then you show a mirror to him to show. He's been bathed, dressed, everything. You're showing him a mirror, so he's happy with how he looks. Right? He can see it looks very nice. Right? Like that. Just like we do something and then we like to look in the mirror. Why do we like to do that? I mean, all over the world, if there's a mirror, we're always looking in it, you know? You get up in the morning, you look how terrible you look, you know? You know, then you brush your teeth and you watch how you brush your teeth. You know, then you wash your face and then you smile at yourself. You know? So all these things. Because Krishna likes to see what he looks like after that. But he doesn't like to look in the mirror while he's brushing his teeth and when he gets up in the morning. He likes to do that after he's had his bath and he's been decorated. That's the difference. Right? Therefore, they don't have these fixed mirrors. Right? Fixed mirror is a modern thing. You know, you can see yourself taking a shower or sitting on the toilet. Or, you know, I mean, that's you know, in the higher the class, the hotel or the house, the bigger the mirrors are, so you can see everything, you know. So like that. But Krishna's more high class than that. That again goes back to, you know, smaller mirrors that are handheld, you know, like that. So that when you don't want to see how bad you look, you know, you can. I mean, you know, I mean, we're very attached to our bodies, so even when we look terrible, we still like to look at ourselves. You know, but the we see that the transcendental flavor is this. Once you're dressed and nicely, then you see, because it's not just for himself. It's how he's going to be able to please his devotees by looking very nice. Or Radharani likes to look in the mirror to see how beautiful she looks, so that she knows she looks beautiful enough for attracting Krishna. Because if something's wrong, it's not beautiful enough, she'll want that changed. You know? Like that. The makeup isn't quite right, or the hair, or something like that. Because it's not for herself, it's for Krishna. So she wants to look the best for Krishna. And Krishna wants to look the best for his devotees. So they look in the mirror to see everything is nice and like that. Plus, Krishna is the most attractive, the most beautiful. So even Krishna likes looking at Krishna because he's the most beautiful. Right? Of course, we may also have the same opinion about ourselves. But, you know, there's relative truth and there's absolute truth. You know? You know? Okay, then the next thing it says, taking the deity to a special mandapa. Sukayanena mandapagamanotsava. Like it's a festival of going to the Sukayanena, a nice place. You know, we can just sit, relax. Okay. You know, he just goes to sit and relax after, you know, he's taking a little, he's eating a little something, just relaxes a little bit, you know, before going out for darshan, like that. So we see that, you know, most of our temples aren't able to perform such worship. So Krishna Kshetra recommends that these next few items one can do by Manasa Puja. But otherwise, you have the Utsav Murtis, and they can go to a special place, sit for a little bit after the bathing, and you know, and you do all these other things, offer a little bit more of this and that, and, you know, you understand? So the whole thing is Krishna takes his breakfast, then he goes and rests a little bit like that. Then after that, then he's dressed a little bit more nicely for going out, right? In other words, the basic dressing is there and that, and then he's dressed a little bit more for going out into public like that after this. So these are things that are going on in the spiritual realm. But we don't have the affection for Krishna. We don't have the vision that we can see these things and appreciate these things. So they're given to us in the form of rules, right? And because it's in the form of rules and because we have no love and we have doubts and this and that, anarthas, therefore it's given very formally, right? Because that is our mood. You put God in front of us, and we see here is, you know, we're very reverential at best, you know. But the point is the residents of Vrindavan just have pure love. So therefore, it comes like this. So it looks like, oh, this is all just big Vaikuntha, this, that. No, this is going on in Golok. But it doesn't carry that flavor. Why doesn't it carry that flavor? Because there's love there. Well, here we just have at best on reverence. He's God, therefore I got to do this. Because he's God, I got to bathe him and wake him up. If I don't do it, then he's going to kick my backside. You know? And that's why we do it. Mother Yashoda doesn't wake him up in the morning because if she doesn't, he's God and then he's going to get upset. No, she does it out of love for him. It's time to get up, time to take your bath, your cows are calling, Nanda Baba wants to see you, all your friends are coming, you know, it's time for your breakfast. You know, all these different things. So out of affection, she wakes them up in the morning. So we don't have that affection. So it has to be a rule. At this time in the morning, you wake up the deities. Right? Mother Yashoda doesn't wake them up at any time of the day. She wakes them up at a particular time of the day. So therefore, it says you have to wake the deity up at this time. You understand? So the eternal pastimes come to us in the form of these rules and regulations. And therefore, and because they're universal, that means someone who worships the Lord in the mood of Vaikuntha, mood of Ayodhya, mood of Dwarka, mood of Mathura, Navadvip, Vrindavan, they all have the basic fundamental rules. Because the deity worship is always formal. So it always has that flavor. But the devotee can know what is there in the eternal pastime behind it. Right? Means in the beginning when we chant, we just hear the name. But as the heart becomes clean, then we relate the name and the form. Right? Means as we understand Krishna more, like if you haven't heard of somebody, you hear their name. So when somebody says this person, you recognize the name. You have no idea what they look like. You know nothing about it. You've heard. But in your mind, you'll put something together. Mainly, you recognize the name. So it's the beginning platform. We're fixed on the name. We hear the name. We recognize, ah, here's Maha Mantra. None different from the Lord. But when we start to know more about Krishna, and the heart is purified, we're able to think more of Krishna, then that form of the Lord, then when we say Hare Krishna, then we think of the Lord. Think of the deities, or think of, you know, a picture that we've seen of Krishna. Like that. Then the name is non-different from the form. Because when you say Krishna, we think of that form. You understand? Then as we deepen more, we understand the qualities. Krishna has so many nice qualities. Just like, you see the person. Right? Then when you hear their name, then you remember, yeah, that person's this. You have a form in your mind. If you get to know more about them, you can see them and doing different things or hear more about them, you hear about their qualities. So then the form and those qualities go together. Right? And then, when it comes to the topmost platform, then when there's affection, then these pastimes manifest. Attachment is there, then these pastimes manifest. So you think of all the activity, just like the child, the mother, you say to her about her child. She doesn't just, oh yeah, I've heard that name before. And it's not just the form. It's not just the qualities. But, you know, she'll think of things she did with them, son coming and running and then sitting on her lap, or coming and, you know, pulling on her sari and say, come see this. And all those things that go into the mind. The pastimes would be there because of they know. The attachment is there. That intimacy is there. So as their attachment goes down for Maya and comes for Krishna, then those stages are there. So in the same way, when we perform the worship in the beginning, it's we're doing it because we know it's supposed to, and here's God. But as we become purified, then we start to, the Lord's form, the qualities, the pastimes, become. It's natural. But it doesn't change the form of it. Right? How we'll do the arti doesn't change. Right? How we'll do the, it means, in other words, the ritualistic aspects stay the same. What changes is just our mood, the affection. Just like you meet somebody, you don't know them. You're gonna deal with them in the same way. You know, you shake the hand, say hello. You know someone, you're still gonna shake the hand and say hello, but the mood and everything's gonna be totally different. It's not formal anymore. There's affection. You understand? So that is very important. So the Hajjis think, then they throw all this out. Before I'm on that platform, I think about all these elevated things, you know, by just force, practice, like that. And I throw out these rules. No, but our concept is we follow these rules, and with time we get to understand those more and more. And then, while we're doing these, we maintain these, we think of the Lord more. In other words, our remembrance of the Lord and all these things deepens. Is that making some sense? So we see that all these things have come, just like what they do in the spiritual realm. Right? Yeah. And then he's gone to the next place. We offer him padyam and all that. Padyam soya, so on. Padyari punarachmana. Means he comes, padyam, Padyamargyamachmani. Like this, you receive him at the new place. He's come to the new place, you wash his feet, receive him, he comes down, because he's come. So whenever you travel, you wash your feet, or after you eat, you wash your feet. Or now you're going to offer him something again to eat, so he washes his feet before, you know, does achman. Like that. In other words, he's having a great time. He's had his bath, ate something, this and that. You know, been dressed, decorated, and then, you know, then he takes a little worship, a little offering to eat. And then, you know, relaxes a little bit, you decorate more after washing his mouth and feet and everything. Decorate a little bit more, then he goes on a palanquin, then goes to a special place to sit. You know, you receive him there, you wash his, you know, feet and offer archman and all that, and offer him something more to eat. So he's just moving around and having a very nice time. Right? So this is the mood, this is what's going on. Huh? You understand? It's not just a bunch of rules and regulations. Because we're dealing with the Lord. So this is what the Lord likes to do. You know? It means this is how it'll manifest through the formal. Right? But as we come to the platform of, you know, asakti and bhava and all, then these changes. And then instead of, you know, these aspects here, then we see what's going on in the eternal pastimes. Yes.
I just think it's very interesting that how you mentioned the main jewels that come out after and after everything is done, and then the boy starts to get into some elaborate dressing. They can move the deities onto the bogas, and if they have everything on, so first they do a little dressing and they feed the Lord, and after they do more, because then they only have to move him back up onto the altar.
Yeah.
Once he's back there, they do more.
Yeah, that's very nice. That's the point. Is that here we're talking about the deity that moves, right? The Utsav Murti. We're not talking about the fixed, the big Murti. The big Murti will just dress and do like that. But the small one, then you dress there, and then you move him back, and then you can dress a little bit more, and things like that. So that's a very nice point. Because before they used to do all these in different places. Where he takes his bath, where he eats, where he does, they're all kind of like different places. So all this is going on. This may be happening to one set of deities, may be happening with two sets of deities, may be happening with five sets of deities. But the point is it's happening. Right? So you have the big main set of deities, the main who we take darshan of, and there may be up to four sets of Utsav Murtis. Right? One for bathing only. So you do all these kind of things. One only for eating. One only for sleeping. And one only for like big festivals, and you know, that goes out into the public and stuff like that. So between, you know, either one set or five sets, all these things get done. That's the whole idea. So these different things are going on, different things. Like that. So that principle of putting your main jewelry on and then putting your special jewelry, that remains. Putting your main tilak and that, and then putting special tilak. You know, all these different aspects are there. So it's two different moods, right? The one is just he wears this much. At least he's dressed. You know, he just basically looks nice. Then we're going to make him look nicer with these few more things. Yeah. But one must always remember, we're not making him look nicer. Because Krishna, by putting the jewels on Krishna, the jewels become more beautiful. Like that. So we should never be thinking, I am doing it. Right. We're assisting those who know how to do these things. Okay, any last question?
Just a point. You know, you're saying that the purpose of the deity worship is to refine someone to the mode of goodness. So it's at some point it's important that people take up deity worship. You know, like you see some devotees, they don't have as much exposure to it than others, so they will never pick up this part of the refined culture and learning to associate and understand how Krishna's pastimes go on and so on.
No, that can. Point is that some part of it one should understand the process, but means the deity worship is very broad, just like the artic. Someone who sees it gets exactly the same benefit as the person who offers it. So everybody's taking part. And as we read in the beginning, part of the Pancharatra is waking up in the morning, offering obeisances, taking a bath and doing all those things, and then, taking care of guests, worshipping devotees, respecting devotees, studying the scriptures, chanting our japa, worshipping Tulsi, taking prasad, living in the dham, cleaning, doing all these different things. It's all part of the Pancharatra. So all that is to purify and to have us understand the importance. Why beautify the dham? It's the spiritual realm. Spiritual realm is already beautiful, doesn't need us, but we can't appreciate the spiritual beauty, so therefore we try to enhance. So it's respect and service out of understanding how dear the dham is to Krishna. Right? And the paraphernalia, you worship the paraphernalia for the puja. Why? Because it's non-different from the Lord. What's used in the Lord's service is non-different from Him. So we respect the paraphernalia. You know? That's why you respect it. You see, I've seen devotees spend half an hour doing elaborate installation of everything of their paraphernalia. Then when they finish the puja, they just throw it all in the sink and, you know, come back 3 hours later and wash it. So that it's not consistent. The realization of the purpose of worshipping the paraphernalia to understand it's non-different from the Lord. Right? Therefore, one should respect it. So as soon as the puja is finished, it should be washed immediately. Right? But if you're not going to wash it immediately, why bother going through all the ritual that's supposed to get you to the point to understand that you're supposed to wash it immediately? Right? What's the meaning of, I installed everything? You know, the bell, the this, the that, and did so many things, and, you know, worshiped, you know, so many parts of the sun and the moon and the fire and in the conch stand and the conscious self and the water, right? And then afterwards I just chuck them in the sink. Better you just go put everything down, sprinkle some water on it, and then start the puja. At least there's a consistency. Otherwise there's such an imbalance. Totally ritualistic on one side and completely below standard, not even up to the standard of ritual on the other side. Right? So the whole point is we see that it establishes a platform of common culture amongst the devotees. The devotees are automatically Brahmins. Vritrasura was a demon. But Indra is worried after killing the demon. Instead of being happy like you would expect him to be, he's unhappy. Why? Because Vritrasura was a devotee. So what happens when you kill a devotee? Then you get the reaction of killing a Brahmin. And he already went through that once after he killed Vishwarup. But Vishwarup is just a Brahmin. So this is a devotee. So not only do you get for killing a Brahmin, but now this is a devotee also. So he's worried. So even though Vritrasura is a demon, he's counted as a Brahmin, right? So let alone anyone who takes up devotional service, they're counted as a Brahmin. By culture, by understanding, by activity. Though, as we mentioned, their conditioned nature may not be Brahminical. So they follow the Brahminical culture, have Brahminical values, are into the philosophy and devotional service. Same time as they may do business, or they may do, you know, management, or they may do, you know, just music or some other activity, or they may be doing the puja or teaching. Or that's another thing. That's what makes the Daivavarnashram system a little confusing. Because when you're dealing with devotees, they're all Brahmins by culture. We don't follow Kshatriya culture or Vaishya or Shudra culture. We follow Brahminical culture. Though we may perform the occupational duties of Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, like that. So the Pancharatra sets that culture for us, right? We don't have the natural spontaneous love to be situated in the spiritual culture. So therefore, that spiritual culture is given to us in the form of rules and regulations or prescribed duties. So we do this. It situates us in the proper platform of purity, and we are able to go back to Godhead. It's supposed to elevate us to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. So that is the purpose. So just like Hare Krishna is powerful enough to elevate us, but because we're conditioned, we tend towards sinful activities. And if you perform sinful activities, it's an offense against the Holy Name. And then the Holy Name is not going to pick you up. Right? So the Gayatri mantras help purify that conditioned nature. And the Pancharatrik system of activities engages and purifies our conditioned nature. Right? You understand?
Probably Gayatri mantras.
Same. The Gayatris and the Pancharatras are all connected, aren't they? The Gayatris, except the Brahma Gayatri, they're all Pancharatric. You understand? Yes, no? We're receiving them through the process of Pancharatra. Otherwise, what's our qualification to get these Gayatris?
What's the purpose of the Gayatri different from the Holy Name?
The Gayatris help bring out that brahminical character. You understand? Means that bringing us closer to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. Especially Brahma Gayatri is for that purpose of taking us from the bodily platform and establishing us, we understand we're the soul. So they do those things. But they only start to work if you already have brahminical nature, basic. So they refine that. The Holy Name, though, by chanting it, brings you the platform of the brahminical. And then by following these, then it enhances that. All right, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare